Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, thank you, Brent. It is so good to be part of the Empower Radio family, and I'm grateful for your hospitality and grateful to all of our listeners for tuning in each week for some positivity. Today, my guest is a good friend of mine, Brian O'Neill from Hollywood, California. He's had a long and successful career in the music business, and if I told you everything he did, we wouldn't even have time to talk to Brian, but he was the lead singer, songwriter, and producer and performer in his band, The Bus Boys, and he also wrote, produced, and performed The Boys Are Back in Town, which is a song every single one of us knows, from the movie 48 Hours, and was nominated for a Grammy for his work on the Ghostbusters soundtrack. And I could go on and on and on, but I'm not going to, because I want to just chat with Brian. How are you doing, Brian?
Paul, I'm doing exceedingly well. Thank you for asking. How are you doing, man?
I am doing good, too. It's a beautiful day here on the East Coast. We've had like summer-like weather for the first time. And actually, I've never known a March to be as beautiful as it's been in New Hampshire. So how are things in the West Coast?
The coast is doing well. We're having a beautiful spring day, very sunny. I mean, I've been keeping up with the weather that's been going on there in New Hampshire, and it's been pretty unbelievable.
I know. People were swatting at the mosquitoes the other day, so that just doesn't happen in March up here. So it's been no one's complaining. And mm-hmm. You know, I just assumed you were on the West Coast because I know you travel all over the place, so I'm glad I was right about that. Brian, you're kind of a bi-coastal guy in that I know you spend a lot of time on the East Coast, and you spend time in my hometown. You've even helped the Moore Center raise funds to provide services for our nonprofit, and I knew you've got a lot of things going on, but I want to start probably where you would least expect me to want to start, and that's to find out a little bit about your childhood, something I know almost nothing about. Would you mind sort of reminiscing for a little bit about that?
Oh, Paul, I don't mind at all. And, I had a very, very wonderful childhood. And it is one of the things that always inspires me to not only do well in my own life, but to want to share and provide some joy and positivity for others. I always say that I've met many people. I've met many men who are taller than me, faster than me, more handsome, more talented, richer, you name it. I've never met a man more blessed. And I say that humbly. I had such wonderful parents. My parents, I was born and raised here in California.
Okay.
My mother came from Arkansas. And my father came from Chicago, independently to California. And they met just after World War II on a very famous street here in Los Angeles called Central Avenue. And the two of them got together, and my father was on the GI Bill. And he and my mother dated, and my mother was going to school, and they worked their way through school because I guess the bill helped you with schooling but didn't do everything.
Yep.
And then my mother just held jobs and went to school. So she worked her way through school. And they did that, and then they both became teachers. And they were lifelong educators, primary school educators. Now, they had me, and I was born in 1956. So I was born, I guess, 10 years after they were already married.
All right.
So that's a lot of planning just to show you what kind of...
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and I say to, you know, I joke with kids sometimes when I'm talking with them. I say, they say, can you give us any tips for success? And I say, choose your parents carefully.
Well, you actually can't take any credit for that, I don't think. But
No.
Maybe on some other plane you can take credit for that. I wouldn't close that option off completely. But so they were teachers for 10 years before you showed up. Is that accurate?
Well, not the entire 10 years before. Okay. So I think they both started teaching. My mother had gotten her first teaching job around when I was born, and then my dad, who was still working with the probation department, then he got his teaching credential shortly after. So then they were teachers going forward until my mother ended up branching off into consulting work, and then she ended up becoming a city council person for the city of Carson, which is a city that the two of them helped found back when I was about 9 or 10 years old.
But
I said all that to say, as far as my life went, it was really, I had a lot of great nurturing, a lot of great friendship from my parents. I have a younger brother who's 5 years my junior, Mr. Very marvelously talented and educated and superior man, Mr. Kevin O'Neill.
Okay.
So, I had those first 5 years of just getting the love and attention and goodness from Mary and Joe. That was their name. And it just helped me develop as a person. I think those primary years in your life, like between, up until you're about 8 to 10 years old, if you can get a really great start there,
right,
it can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, it does. It certainly, it's a good start. It's really a head start, I think, many times. But what about the music? I mean, was that something that, did you come from a family of musicians, and were you encouraged to pursue music, or was that something that you just sort of moved in yourself?
My brother and I both often ask that question, because Kevin is a brilliant bassist, singer. He was co-leader with me in the Bus Boys when we first started, and is now a professor at Santa Monica College. And so we're both very intensely musical, and people say, well, there must have been a lot of music in your family. And, not from our parents. Neither one of them are musicians or musically inclined that way. I started playing piano when I was about 4. I would just go over to my godfather, who had a piano at his house, and I would pick notes out when they would leave me over there for my godfather to take care of me. And my mom would come home. I said, Mom, let me show you this. So I'd play a little 3-note thing on the piano, like, most kids will do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of fell in love with it. And then I asked my mother, and I can remember this like it was yesterday, Paul. I was 5. And I asked my mother, I said, Mom, I really, really, really want to have a piano.
Hmm.
So about the third time I said it, she says, Brian, I would like to get you a piano, but pianos are very expensive. And she says, I'm afraid that I'll get you this expensive piano, and you'll want it for a couple of weeks or something, and then the next thing you'll want is you'll want a bicycle or something.
Right.
And without missing a beat, I just said, Mom, you're right. I will want the bicycle, but I still want the piano. So she got me the piano.
Did you get a bike too, I hope?
I got a bike and skates and bongos and a football and a hula hoop. And
what is so interesting about that story, Brian, there are so many kids whose parents sort of forced them to play the piano and they resisted that. And yet there are so many adults now, myself included, that wish someone had made me play the piano, because you see someone play, especially, seeing someone like you play the piano, and there's something so inspiring about that. So it's interesting for a kid to not resist the piano lessons, but actually be asking, I want to play the piano. That seems like a little bit of an unusual story, or a little bit of a twist to what I usually hear.
I've had a love affair with music my entire life, and I still have one. I always think that my career is partly a reflection of a part of my involvement with music, but it is not the primary thing. When I wake up in the morning, the very first thing I want to do is put some water on my face and get situated, get a cup of coffee, and sit down and play.
Hmm.
Now, and I play several instruments, and I enjoy playing them all. And this is not for just my professional practicing. There's some of that in there, too, that works its way in. But I'm really just playing and listening, and then I put music on. I listen to other people play, and I love sing and songwriting and producing. I just love music.
Yeah.
And I always have, Paul.
Well, I've seen you play, and the love is in your performance, and it's on your face. So it's no secret, probably to most of the people that know you, that it's an incredible and love is the right word for it feeling that you have. And I feel like I interrupted. Did I interrupt a thought you wanted to finish, Brian?
No. Go ahead.
Because I'm intrigued by your, and I know you have this sort of gentle, optimistic spirit about you. And do you attribute that to specific lessons that your parents taught you, or was it just the environment itself that sort of allowed you to develop this view of the world?
I'll say yes.
Okay. My favorite word. My favorite word.
I think it's all things, no one specific thing. Again, I had such wonderful parents and a great start with life. But, you know, I find that, this is just my experience, people sort of have almost in the beginning a certain aptitude for positivity and how they look at it, like whether the glass, them looking at the glass is half full or half empty. In the beginning, before you start making choices or even recognizing it, you sort of have a response to that.
Right.
And I've always looked at it as if I wasn't even concerned whether it was half full or half empty. I just, does it hold water?
Right.
Because I can always get some water to put in the glass, and or if I don't have a glass, I can get a glass. So I've always had that thought of, you know, sometimes in the face of varying difficulties and challenges, and it doesn't mean that I am oblivious to the potential or the pitfalls of things that could happen. And it does not mean that every circumstance and situation works out the exact way that I want it to. It just means that I'm not discouraged by that.
Right.
And I'm always...
Does it actually mean, Brian, that you're never discouraged or that you rebound quickly?
It means I'm always working towards encouragement.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and I see that with other people that I admire. There are certain things about the way that they do things. I was just looking at the biography on television the other night of Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everyone thinks of Walt Disney as, you know, this brilliant genius guy that was the illustrator and created Mickey Mouse, and then he created a magical land, and he made billions of dollars. That's like the short story. But when you see how all of that unfolded and the number of challenges that he had during the course of it, and both personal and professional, I mean, even as late as him wanting to start the park, because this was after he had already established himself in film and he was doing fairly well and they were making good money and had hired people, he wanted to establish this park, this idea he had. Well, he mortgaged his life insurance.
I never knew that.
To start the park, not to finish, not like he had all this. And it was, and there's no guarantees, you got to understand, when you're an entrepreneur in particularly, or anything in life. There's no guarantee that if you do this for sure, it's going to work out in XYZ. Doesn't really work that way. So I see people that are, and I'm inspired by, and hope to be a person who's willing to assess the potentials of any situation and of to look at all of the opportunities that are present and then to decide what it is you want to do with them. Plan your work and work your plan and go for it. And I do that every single day. It takes like vitamins or working out. It takes a refresher course every day. It's not something you learn when you're 14 and you just have it.
I completely agree with that. And I would add to that, Brian, the need to have other people around you that share that same outlook, who I think you sometimes take turns encouraging and motivating each other. So I believe, at least for me, that you need a circle of people around you that think like that as well.
That is really true. And during the course of my life and career, I've had many great people, not the least of which is I'm still blessed to have my mother still with me. My dad passed away a few years ago. But my mom, who's 86 years old, I still have to get on her schedule. I mean, mm-hmm. That's how busy she is. I have keys so I can go by the house and drop by, but I may be sitting there still make yourself at home, but I'm not here. I wasn't expecting you.
you have to talk to her people to get an appointment, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
That is funny. And go ahead. And
I have a wonderful wife and two wonderful children who are my kids, my sons. I have twin boys who just turned 16 years old. And they're a constant inspiration for me because they were diagnosed as being autistic or having autism when they were like about 3 or 4 years old. And experts, well-meaning experts, have predicted they might not talk, and we have to put them together with a program that would show pictures and alternative learning processes, et cetera. And my kids are doing exceedingly well. Both doing exceedingly well at school, both on a track to go to college.
That's amazing.
But both talking. They are always saying what I want to hear.
Well, join the club, Brian, on that one. Join the club on that one. You know, every time you and I get together, which is probably maybe once a year now, we're actually able to sit down and be in each other's presence, we always find ourselves talking, much like we're talking today. But when you and I get together in New Hampshire, we don't have a half hour to do it. And there's so many things I want to ask you. And one of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit was your career in show business. Because if there ever was a career that had its ups and downs, I can't think of any career that would have more ups and downs than a career in show business. It's like no matter how successful you are, no matter how great things are going today, even like you're in a Broadway play, you're in a movie, you've written a hit song, but those things have a limited run in a sense. And so you're always, most of the people that I know that are performers or actors, they're always sort of thinking about what's next. And it is a series of ups and downs, at least from my vantage point. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. And, I didn't know that when I was younger. I used to, when I would buy albums, and I would read all the liner notes, and I would listen to the music, it was almost like being that person or being a person like that, it was almost like a destination.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that when I got there, that things would be, I would get to that place.
Right.
I would get to be one of the people when I would thumb through my records. I'd be one of those people. And
mm-hmm.
And that would take care of it. But you're right. What you find out in entertainment and many forms of entrepreneurism, but maybe particularly entertainment, everything is one project at a time.
Right.
And no matter how successful the one project was, it's not going to be enough for your entire career, which it's not that you wanted it to be.
Right.
But here's one of the things that's really tricky. They don't always give you sustainable platforms to build on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big thing and a deal, and you get money and awards and all the stuff that you wanted out of it, and it's wonderful. And then it just goes poof.
Right.
And yes, it does set you up in some ways to do the next project that you may do, but you can't do what you just did.
Right.
So it's not a repeatable thing. You have to go do something else, and it will either be as successful in some commercial ways or less successful.
Yeah, it's in many ways it's sort of is a metaphor, if you will, for life in general, but it's more compressed. So you see those ups and downs, perhaps with less space in between. But life, no matter how successful you are, no matter how happy you are, no matter how easy things seem to be going, is full of ups and downs and unexpected turns and twists. And so it's not unlike life in general, but it seems to happen at a faster rate in show business.
It does. And you have, in some ways, some less security. It's like after you, I believe, if you go through school in particular and you get a good education and you maybe have some skills and whatnot, you end up getting a job and you have a job for a while. Even if the job disappears, you are looking for some more work possibly. Or so you sort of have some regularity. Also, there is the, which nobody talks about, there's the complete irregularity of cash flow in my business.
Yep.
And I don't care how much you make, it still doesn't come. Everybody else is getting, the whole entire business workaday world is all built on 30-day increments.
Yeah.
And no one in show business, not Tom Hanks, Denzel Washington, or doesn't matter who you are, you are not on everyone else's 30-day schedule.
That's very true.
So you have at best sort of project schedules and quarterly schedules, and so you have to sort of save, plan and save and or do. And, of course, you could make so much that you don't have to be concerned about with your daily comings and goings.
Mm-hmm.
But you still are not on the same schedule that everyone else is on. And unless you were born rich,
right,
and successful, which are, that's very few, you had to work your way up to this point where you even have the leeway to be able to function on a regular basis and have this quarterly up and down and the cash flow of it all still work out for you.
Right. I know it's a tricky business, but it's also an exciting business. One of our mutual friends is from Manchester, David Bellman, who is a very highly regarded businessman in my neck of the woods, but he's also a musician and a drummer. And how did you two meet, and how has David inspired you, and what's that connection all about?
Well, David is my best friend, you know. He and I talk every morning.
That's wonderful.
I mean, you know, if there's a morning we don't talk, it's very unusual. And then we usually talk a couple of times a day. And talking about people who are positive that help give you inspiration. He's my rocking in the storm.
Yeah.
He really is the my go-to guy. I met David through a mutual friend of ours who was working for me at the time. And her name was Constance Adler. And she and David knew one another through a Jewish youth group that David used to come to participate in and visit when he would visit California. So she, I guess, said to him at some point, you want to go see a band working on a record or recording session? Dave said, sure. So they came to see us, and I believe we were working on the songs for 48 hours. And he and I met and had a good time, and Dave has always been a ton of fun and extremely successful. And when you're younger, before you have children and any other obligations and your businesses get bigger and that whole thing, you really are kind of on the go. So I would be on tour and David would say, oh, where are you going to be? And I'd say, we're swinging through Texas, or we're going to go here, or we're going to go through New Orleans. And somebody says, well, I'll meet you there. I said, oh, well, I'll stick an extra room on the thing for you, and you just come on out. So David would fly out and come hang out with us for a couple of days, and we'd hang out on
great.
The bus and do stuff and tell jokes and have a good time. And that's how our relationship really began to develop. And then when we were touring a little less, David invited me to come to New Hampshire, because I had not been to New Hampshire other than to, I guess, maybe I visited him once when we played in Boston. We went into New Hampshire for a minute. But he invited me to come stay with him for like 4 or 5 days. He says, oh, don't worry about it. You know, listen, you can stay at my house. We'll take care of you. No, blah, blah, blah. And we started doing that. So I would come out and visit. And that's how I, again, more growth in our relationship and then also in our friendship. And then I started getting a relationship with Manchester and other parts of New Hampshire there. And so that's sort of my sister city there.
I know it is. And, you know, it's fun talking about David. And we've only got, you're going to have to definitely come back, and because I wanted to talk more about your family and your boys. And there are so many things that I had on a list of things to talk about, and we're not getting to them all because we just got a couple minutes left. But one of the things that that David does so well in New Hampshire is say yes to so many nonprofits. He's always sort of stepping up and helping people, and not just with his resources, but with his time, which is sometimes even the most valuable gift that you can share. But the last question I want to ask you, Brian, is how are you changing or evolving? You're getting older like the rest of us. And how do you see yourself sort of evolving? What's next for you?
Well, I have different, on a professional level, I'm working on a new television show, Busboys TV, which is sort of in a way a throwback to older, like the Nat King Cole show in a way. We come on and we perform things from our catalog, and then we have guest performers come on. It's a little more music-centric and not sort of a variety. We don't tell jokes and that type of thing. But I'm really trying to get as much documentation of my music, the bands, and other musicians whose work I really admire. Just trying to get have that be cataloged in the digital world so they can play on past our lifetimes and people can share what we feel and do and the work we have dedicated our lives to. And then I've been producing some other film and television shows. And I continue my love affair with music, making music and doing that. Now that's professional. Personally, I'm just trying to be the best dad and life mate that I can. And, trying to continue to spread as much joy. I figure that I'm probably at least the halfway point.
Yep.
And
well,
so the more time I can spend sharing and giving back to a life that's been so good to me, the better I feel.
You know, Brian, will you? Can we do another one of these shows and we can talk more about all the things that are going on in your life and spend some time talking about your kids and how they're doing? And I know your wife has actually been working on a book that sort of talks to some of the earlier experiences with your kids. And there's just so much that I want to explore with you. So I hope that you come back and chat with me again. Would you do that?
Oh, I'd love to. And I encourage the people who have joined the show to listen, as I encourage myself to believe in the power of yes, and to always be willing to wrap your arms around your dreams and to go forward.
It's a beautiful way to end the show, Brian. And we'll get you scheduled to come back and keep on talking like we do when we're sitting together in the same room. Have a great day, Brian, and
okay.
Talk to you real soon.
Thank you, Paul. You too.
Bye, buddy.
Bye-bye.